Governor, before we get back to our callers, I'm reminded with the chilly weather, Governor Carlson won both kudos and criticism for closing the schools from time to time when it got particularly nasty. What's going to be your policy on that?
Well, you got to take it as what the weather is and make the call basically as you see it, I think. Everyone loves to hear the stories, but, you know, it was funny. When I went to public school here for 13 years, kindergarten through 12th, they closed school one day out of those 13 years. And I don't think it's any colder today than it was then. And, you know, the other unique thing, I used to have to walk to school uphill both ways.
I was going to say, now you're not going to start in with that nonsense. Right?
It's not nonsense. I even took my son and showed him how far I had to walk to Roosevelt High School my sophomore and junior year before I was old enough to have a car to do it. And he was pretty impressed. He said, "You really did walk that far." I said, "You darn right." Because there, in city schools then, Gary, there wasn't school buses. Mm-hmm. There was not any school buses whatsoever. You walked to school then. And so, but getting back to the issue, if it is hazardous to health, then I think you have to take that into consideration. But let's remember, we're Minnesotans. We should be able to dress and function in pretty tough style of weather. And so, and besides, wouldn't it be better to give the day off on a nice summer day?
Bob, your question for the governor.
Yeah, since you were just speaking of helping humanity, Governor, yeah. Are you aware that there are about 700 homeless people sleeping outside in the Twin Cities and that the facilities provided for homeless male adults are grossly inadequate? My question, Governor, is if you are aware of the situation, what you propose to do about it? Do you actually believe that the politicians should give all the budget surplus back without addressing and eliminating this disgraceful homeless problem?
Well,
Hennepin County Commissioner Mark Andrews
very briefly,
the situation is completely inexcusable and immoral.
Well, first of all, we have charities, don't we? Yes, we do. We have charities out there that work in this industry that are out there to help people and do that. And, you know, and in giving the surplus back, well, you have to remember there are taxpayers out there that pay taxes. And they're entitled to some type of benefit, too. And when they've been overtaxed or taxed beyond what it required to run the government, if you want to talk about that, then we need to put it into a budget. We need to address it in the budget, not take just because there's surplus money of overtaxation that it automatically goes to every special interest group in the world that has a cause out there. What about the cause of the average citizen that goes to work every day, holds down a job, supports their wife, their children, or it could be a working mother for that matter, an adult, supporting and doing their part of being part of society and paying those taxes? People forget that, you know, people are out there paying taxes and they need to be looked at too. You're dealing with other people's tax money also. And I realize homelessness is a problem. It needs to be addressed. But you also have to have people that want to help themselves. You can't help someone that does not want to help themselves. And I know it sounds a little harsh, but there are some people that choose to be homeless.
Do you see the state budget is growing at all or pretty much fixed right where it is? And any increase in one area would have to be made up with by cuts in another area.
I see it as that very much. I see the budget growing only inflation during this first budget time, because, and certainly inflation has to be factored in, because 80% of the budget goes to salaries of some sort. And, you know, you negotiate them and raises come in and you have to deal with it like that. But people need to remember the government is not charity. The government is not, you know, what rights do you really have out there? When you think about it, you have the right to something. You have the right to go out there, live free, and compete within our United States society. And the government is not a charity institution. The government is an institution that is paid for by other people's tax dollars. We have charities out there. And when the economy is good, charities tend to be good, too. So let's keep working on the economy. We have a strong economy. People are giving people. They will help out other people without government acting as a middleman.
In terms of the budget, you've talked about getting those class sizes down in education. And I know the teachers are interested in some substantial increases in the what's called a per pupil funding formula and the rest. Any idea where the money will come from to pay for that for those
class
extra...
sizes down? Yeah. It's already being allocated for it. It's been allocated for it for the last 3 or 4 years. It's just the problem is they made the allocation with loopholes in it.
But there's enough money for that.
I feel very strongly in my budget coming up that we can shift things around and put that as a priority. Everybody has to remember something. You know, everyone has a wish list, and it would be tremendous if we all could have our wishes fulfilled. But if we fulfill everyone's wish list, well, then we're going to be paying probably 60, 70% of our salaries to the government. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's right either. You know, so we have to set priorities. We have to do the things that were approached by every charity in the world. And every charity is admirable. Every charity is the most important one for that person that's talking to you. But you have to make a choice, and believe me, of one or two that you concentrate on, and you take care of that, and that's, in a way, that's the way it is in what I have to do. I have to set 3 or 4 major priorities to get done. And if you can accomplish that, you're doing well. You know, it's very hard to thin yourself out, and because then you end up doing a number of things, far too many things, and you don't do them well then.
Have you settled on those 3 or 4 priorities that Ventura administration?
Getting that class size down is extremely important because I think that solves many of the other problems. See, you want to pick out the biggest problem that'll have the best trickle-down effect to solving the other problems. And in Milwaukee and in Tennessee and in these other places where they've gone to a legitimate 17-to-1 ratio, and when I mean legitimate, I mean walking into any classroom, K through 3rd is where you start, walking into any one of those classrooms, any school in Minnesota, and never seeing over 17 students per one teacher. And then I think you'll see the results. Education will pick its way up. Test scores will start going up. But again, it's a generational thing. Mm-hmm. You've got to start and work its way into it.
Any other top priorities?
Top priorities, again, are holding the line on government spending. I think it was very, very clear in this election. You know, people have said, well, Jesse doesn't have a mandate because he only got 37% of the vote. True. But you'll find that my fiscal was very close to Mayor Coleman's fiscal. We weren't far apart on our fiscal. And if you add up his 34 with my 37, you come out with 71. Mm-hmm. And that was very much, we were not far apart fiscally because we believe in American people. We believe that people, if given the chance out there and you almost move government out of the way as an obstacle, they will succeed. We just need to be there to support them in some manner so they can succeed, but not become their parents.
Anything else? Class size, hold the line on state spending, anything else that's going to, when we get done, we're going to say, well, that's what Jesse Ventura stood for.
Well, I think that also that being this surplus we've had and all that, I think cutting some of the taxes. There's, you know, I find it very interesting that you take the automobile, the license tabs. It's the only one we have that is based on a price. If you buy a hunting license, it's a flat fee. If you buy a fishing license, it's a flat fee. A motorcycle license is a flat fee. That drives on the same roads, right? A motorcycle. Mm-hmm. Yet they don't base that fee on, you know, what the price of the motorcycle was. You've already been taxed on the price of that automobile, a sales tax when you buy it. See, here you're buying the privilege to drive on the roads. And I don't think the value of the car should have very much of a bearing on what you pay for tabs to use those roads. I think that it should be much more of a flat rate type thing. And we've got a pretty creative method that I'm going to bring forward in this budget that I think people are going to enjoy, because the one thing you can do right now is you can write those fees off on taxes. We're going to be able to accomplish a much flatter rate and still get the benefit of writing off those fees. Killing two birds with one stone, if I might add that.
David, your question for the governor, please.
Yeah, I'm a township supervisor up here in northern Minnesota, Crystal Bay Township. And my issue I wanted to bring up was real estate taxes, because we've got a situation where people have lived here for a long time, even like old fishermen who lived along Lake Superior.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got developers coming in, buying land, price of the land goes up. And that old timer who's retiring, trying to, on that little plot of land that he had along Lake Superior. He can't afford to live there anymore.
Yeah. What was your name again?
David.
David.
Up here in Minnesota.
Okay, David, let me tell you this. And I sympathize up by Lake Superior, but guess what? It's going on like that all over the state.
Right. And
it's not just up there, because it happens everywhere development moves to.
And my point is there any way, you know, like taxes, you're taxed at the point of sale. And I don't understand why people are taxed.
Because your neighbor's property went up in value.
Right.
And why should you be taxed for improving your property?
Right.
Yeah. No, I fully understand. And here's what I'm going to tell you, David. Right now, my main key has been the budget, because you come in here as a newly elected governor and 25% new legislators, and you're faced with putting together a biannual budget before you've even got your feet wet. So I've got to focus on putting that budget together right now. When that is over, there'll be other sessions will come up down the road. Well, when we're done with the budget, that's when I can start turning to these other things. And I will tell you, over the next 4 years, my personal goal will be to do something with this property tax system that we have in the state of Minnesota to make it more equitable to people and to get it out of the quagmire it's in. It is just so complicated, so ridiculous. The politicians have made it that way, and we've got to do something to simplify it, make it fair, and make it absolutely to where people are not driven off their land because developers come into a certain area and they want to develop it. But you got to give me a chance on that one. Let me get the budget done. Then I'm done with budgets for 2 years. I don't have to deal with budgets for 2 years. When that gets done, then rest assured I'm going to turn my attention to the property tax system, and we're going to do something with it. I hope those legislators are listening out there, because what you got happening now with this system is ridiculous. And the other message I want to send to legislators, and I want the people to send it to them, just because they're elected to do legislation doesn't mean they have to come over there with a big bucket full, basket full of more laws. We won't think any less of them by not creating more laws for us to live under. I mean, I was in the Secretary of State Joan Groh's office right before an inauguration took place, and on her wall, literally a whole wall, Gary, 5-6 rows high, are all the laws of the state of Minnesota. Now, how can they, you know, they tell you ignorance of the law is no excuse. How on earth can you use that as a formula to live by when it would require you to get a trailer and a truck to just to have all these laws and be aware of them all? You'd have to read these laws for the next year and a half just to be caught up on them.
A lot of people complain all the time about regulations.
Oh. You know what else I'd like to see happen?
Which one do you want to? Which pick one that you want to whack here?
A regulation?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know off the top
or
of my head right now. I would like to make fireworks legal over 4th of July for adults. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the traditional way that we celebrate the birth of our nation, and it's kind of weird to me that I can go out and buy a 44 Magnum handgun, right, with a 7-day wait. Because I have a clean record, I can go buy one, you know. And yet, over the 4th of July, I can't buy a sparkler or a ladyfinger firecracker if I want to throw one. But yet, I can buy a 44 Magnum handgun.
As a private citizen, Governor, did you ever cheat on that law? I know you wouldn't do it as a governor.
On fireworks?
Yeah.
Occasionally. And I think I joined a lot of other Minnesotans that were, too. Up at my lake cabin this summer, there was at least 7 or 8 major spots around the lake that were, I mean, it was very nice, very enjoyable, and I felt very patriotic, to put it that way, on 4th of July. And I'm not saying, and the other point is, look at how Wisconsin is making a fortune off us right now. Because Wisconsin across the border sells all this fireworks, makes all the money, and who's buying it? The Minnesotans are, because Wisconsin has a law that you have to get a license to shoot it yourself. So they are sitting over there. Tommy Thompson's a smart son of a gun. He's sitting across the border making a fortune over there off of us.
Doug, your question for the governor?
Good afternoon, Governor.
Hi.
Yeah, this is the Brownwater Sailor you talked to at the Becker County Fair last summer.
All right.
And all through your campaign, people ask, what makes you qualified to be governor? And there's one thing that people didn't realize, and that's the Navy motto. not self, but service.
Yeah.
But my question is, and earlier it was brought up in your program about what can you do to keep people interested in government and keep that ball rolling? Well, it'd be a good time to strip the hypocrisy from government and elected officials right now. And they've taken the oath to uphold the Constitution. Uptake all the laws that are going to be passed and the ones that have been passed, hold them up against the Constitution and see where we're at.
Very good.
A minute
idea.
Ago, you said we have all these laws. Well, there'd be a lot less laws if they were held up to the constitutional value.
Okay, but you have to remember, too, though, times change, you know, sometimes, you know, and you have to adapt with those times and laws accordingly. And there are a lot of outdated laws. You know what, another one, Gary, now that it comes to mind, you ask me what I'd like to do. We need to decide when a person's an adult. We need to pick an age, both federally, statewide, and locally. We need to pick that age because right now, young men have to go register for the Selective Service at age 18. Now, in my opinion, if you're old enough to serve your country, you should be old enough to have a beer, to put it bluntly. If you're old enough potentially to give your life for your country, well, shouldn't you be an adult? Or do we send children to war? Is that our policy? Because if you're not old enough to drink a beer and yet you're old enough to be drafted, you know, and we don't have a draft, but they still have to register for it.
Of course, if we lower the drinking age, then we lose a whole ton of federal highway money.
Well,
don't
then maybe we need to up the age of drafting young people. If they're, and I'm not saying which age is correct, but let's pick one. Let's get rid of the hypocrisy of what we've got going here where, oh, it's good to have them adults at 18, but we're not going to give them the rights of adults at 18. Let's pick one. If it's 21, then fine. Young people shouldn't have to register for Selective Service until 21.
What seems like a good age to you?
I am 20. What about voting? We allow you to vote at 18. See, here you go. The hypocrisy of it again. We need to pick an age and say this is the age we recognize as being an adult. Maybe that's part of the mixed message these young people get. It's one of the most traumatic things I faced. I came back, I went through, enlisted in the Navy, went through a year of being trained as a Navy SEAL, went to Southeast Asia, spent 9 months over there, came back to the United States of America, and could not walk into a bar if I wanted to. I was underage. I was in California. I was 21. I wasn't 21. I went into my executive officer and said, I want to go back overseas. He said, you can't. You've got to spend at least, no, he said, you've got to spend at least, you know, 9 months here back stateside before you can rotate. He said, why would you want to go back? I said, because over there, I'm an adult. Over there, no one's questioning me. I come back home, and all of a sudden, I'm a child. That's tough to take when you're in the military and you realize that you have the potential of giving up your life for your country, and yet your country won't even honor you with treating you like an adult. Is it that we send children off to do it? Let's pick that age.
I want to ask you this before we wrap up here, because you've come in for some substantial criticism of late for being too obsessed with money, making movies, selling books. You've talked about first lady.
I'm a capitalist. I've been obsessed with earning a living and going out and working hard my whole life, Gary. What's obsession about that?
But now you're the governor.
So?
Shouldn't you just devote all of your attention and time now to that?
I am. No one, and I've also devoted from November 3rd to today doing it without being paid. Do you get paid? How often do you come in here and do your show for free? Well, have I been working? Yes, I have. 12 to 14 hours. Now let me finish. As far as the book deal goes, that's an autobiography of my life up until the election day. I think there's a story that needs to be told that almost is even bigger than me in the story of the behind the scenes of how this all took place. I think it's very interesting. There is no movie deal. There's NBC's doing one unauthorized, apparently, without my permission. How about that? How come they're allowed to do that? They're allowed to make a movie of me. I have no input into it, no artistic input, and get nothing from it. So let's talk about this celebrity status where you lose your rights. If they did that to you, or if they did that to a regular citizen on the street, they'd get sued over it. But because I'm who I am, they can do it. And as far as the First Lady thing goes, I'm bringing that to the attention of the Minnesota public and the public of the United States because I find it blatant sexism. Cut and dried, end of story. Let's think for an example. Let's put up a hypothetical here. Let's say I was a widower or not married, okay, and I got elected governor. Who would run the residence?
Aren't there people who take care of that?
Yes, but who runs them? Who oversees them right now? The First Lady. Now, I'm single. I don't have a significant other. Who then would do it, Gary? We'd hire someone, wouldn't we?
So that's officially part of her responsibilities?
Absolutely it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. Next point. Let's say May Shunk becomes the next governor after me. Mm-hmm. So let's say her husband, Bill, he's an executive. He works a job. Does Bill have to leave his job to go run the residence? Would we do that to a man?
I wasn't aware that the spouse was required to do that.
Yes, they are. They are the person in charge of running the residence, overseeing it. And I'm not doing it just, and I'm not saying it
doesn't
has to come out.
Doesn't the governor, I mean, if that doesn't sound right.
The governor doesn't run it.
Yeah.
Governor doesn't run the residence at all. Hmm. I have nothing to do with that. The inaugural, guess who gets to do that? The First Lady puts together the entire inaugural, works with committees, but that's her responsibility. It's not mine. It's not the governor's responsibility. And my point being is, to me, it's, and I'm not saying that she has to be paid or compensated out of taxpayer dollars. They have a foundation that runs the residency and does that right now through donations, through all the improvement that goes to that building is not being done with taxpayer dollars. I'm just saying I find it very sexist. That the female is expected to leave her job and take over a job and work 10 to 12 hours a day and not be paid for it? And what happens when they entertain on a state function? What about the incurred expenses that come in that? Would she greet the ambassador of Japan in Zubas and a T-shirt? That's my point. And what if the governor were single? Who runs it then? We'd hire someone. Someone would get hired to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is we've never had a single governor. But if that were the case, someone would get, I can't do it. I don't have time to do that. I don't have any time to do that whatsoever. I can assure you of that.
Hmm. Well, we're out of time, unfortunately.
And my main thing is not to get my wife paid, Gary. My main thing is to bring certain things to light. And remember, you have a governor now and a First Lady who come truly from the private sector. So this is new to us. And I'm simply reacting to what I'm watching and reacting to the way it's been and what goes on. And I'm simply being honest and bringing it out to the public. And if I take criticism for it, so be it.
Think it's going to be fun?
Absolutely. I'm having fun right now. Absolutely. Hey, you're it's like anything. You've committed to doing the job. You might as well have some fun doing it. Jeez, if I get depressed now, I'm in a world of hurt.
People poking at you all the time?
Oh, yeah, but that's all right. I'm the boss now. Although sometimes you wouldn't know it when I get handed my schedule.
Governor,
thank you. Be there and away we go. Thanks, Gary, very much.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Our guest this hour, the new governor of the state of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura. And if you missed part of the conversation, we will be rebroadcasting his program at 9 o'clock tonight here on Minnesota Public Radio. Rebroadcast at 9 this evening.